I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. 3 years ago, John English published the first of two volumes of a biography of Pierre Trudeau. That first volume was best-selling, critically acclaimed, and award-winning. Now he returns with a second volume, which is already a bestseller, Just Watch Me, The Life of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, 1968 to 2000. Is the awaited volume that begins when he was sworn in as Canada's 15th Prime Minister. It takes us through the October crisis, his subsequent near defeats, wins, and defeats in those elections he contested, as well as the patriation of the Constitution and battles over Quebec with René Lévesque and the Sovereigntists. There's discussion of the women in Trudeau's life, from Barbara Streisand to the mother of his three sons, Margaret Sinclair, to Deborah Coyne, with whom he had a daughter, Sarah, and those women in between. It's a compelling book, accessible yet definitive. John English won numerous awards for his previous Trudeau volume, as well as his two-volume biography of Lester Pearson. He is a professor of history at the University of Waterloo and the executive director of the Center for International Governance Innovation, and general editor of the Dictionary of Canadian Biography. Just Watch Me is published by Knopf. I'm pleased to welcome back to the Plant Online program John English. Good morning, Professor English. The quotable Trudeau is something that I noticed when reading the book. Just things like, you know, Where's Biafra, and the title of the book, Just Watch Me. He is the most quotable prime minister, certainly, politician in Canadian history, isn't he?
Well, I think so. There's a couple of rivals, but there in the earlier period, probably Laurie and MacDonald had pretty quick lines and wit, too. But in our lifetime, Trudeau was in a class by himself.
Well, when you looked at these letters that you had access to, that no one else had access to, did you, do you see that in his writing that he, I don't know how, that he, quotable is the wrong word, that he has this use of language that's definitive almost in his thoughts and in his beliefs.
Yeah, he's very sharp. I mean, not that he's sharp in terms of intelligence, but he's very, his comments are acute, perceptive, and pointed. He's practiced. In his earlier letters, he would do drafts, even of love letters, and he was that careful about expression. So he thought very carefully about what he did in his essays that were published in Federalism and the French Canadians in 1968. If you read them through, you see that he's got the gift for the epigram and for the short, succinct summing up. He and in politics, of course, he did it so many times, so very, very well. And in the House of Commons, which he didn't enjoy, but he was very good in question period because he was so sharp and quick and had one-liners down pat.
These you mentioned these letters that you'd seen, drafts. I mean, few of us write letters nowadays, let alone draft letters. You mentioned that he was quite careful. When you're looking, he was a pack rat, was he?
He was a pack rat, and his mother, he certainly inherited from his mother, who saved every examination paper he ever wrote and every doodle he ever did. But he saved just about everything. He saved hotel receipts, received taxi receipts. He saved every postcard he got. It was astonishing, his proclivity to cling on to things.
As a biographer, is that, I mean, that's obviously useful.
What to dream of.
Yeah.
Most people aren't like that. I'm a historian, and I'm not like that. But he was, whether it was his sense of destiny, that he was going to be a person who mattered, or whether it was just a trait that he just carefully husbanded everything he had. He was miserly, too. He hated to spend money. He just loathed spending money. And that part was true as well. He just wouldn't spend money unnecessarily. So in all ways, he was very careful, very, very careful.
And all of that stuff, even the receipts and the sort, that's still being kept, right?
Yeah, all the receipts are kept. He was punctilious about time. He would never arrive late for an appointment, and he was careful about his receipts. He kept them all.
An interesting way to look at the book, as one of your reviewers has written, is to think of the what ifs. And the one that he began with, I forget now which review that was a relationship with Barbara Streisand. They were quite serious, were they?
Yes, they were. I talked to Ms. Streisand. said about him after I wrote things that I picked up on from the some books about her and from her letters to Trudeau. They're pretty close. They had a jocular relationship. They used to joke about things, and when he bought his Art Deco house, she had one, and she wrote, "Oh, show me yours, and show me yours, and I'll show you mine," and things like that. And she said that the chemistry between them was incredible. She had spotted him. She read about him in Life magazine, decided this might be an interesting man. She was, her own marriage was breaking up, and then they met, and she said it just was immediate. They immediately latched on to each other. But she also said that she recognized that he was the prime minister of a country. Her career had really taken off. She had won the Academy Award for Funny Girl. She was a Democrat, which he was too in American politics, but very active Democrat and not very pleasing to Richard Nixon, of course, who was the president at the time. And then she was Jewish. He was a Catholic, probably more practicing Catholic than she was Jewish, but nonetheless. And also he, she thought, well, would this really work? And then she, in her own words, found it kind of scary. That's her word, scary. And they pulled up, but they remained very good friends.
In terms of talking to Barbara Streisand, I mean, people in the press in the United States who cover entertainment say that she's hard to talk to. Did you find that she was hard to talk, like, hard to get access to?
No. She didn't respond to the initial thing, but when I sent her the information from the papers, she responded immediately, and I found her tremendously charming and funny. You know, she's got a good sense of humor.
When Trudeau lost in 1972, well, he didn't lose. He came close to losing.
Came very close, yeah.
To two seats. Can we say that Trudeau mania died then?
It had died earlier. We're going through Obama mania, which the term was used in Canada, because it recalled Trudeau mania, and the same thing happened. Trudeau, he dropped in the polls, and he didn't seem to be the miracle worker about 6 months after the election. He was very quick. They thought, just as they do with Obama, he's more conservative and more cautious than they had expected, and they didn't see the great dramatic changes that the personality and the campaign promised. So it had actually come to an end, say, by middle of 69. But having said that, just like Obama, he remained the giant on the political landscape, because he is charismatic, he is dynamic, and so much is expected of him. But there were disappointments that came immediately. So Trudeau mania died in about 10 months. But it came back at certain moments. He would electrify a crowd. I'm talking about a meeting I went to in Kitchener when he came in 1979, and he was at a low ebb in popularity. He was to lose that election, but I went to it, and I was very, very surprised. I'd seen a lot of politicians in the United States as well as Canada, and he dominated the stage, and there was an electricity about him. But the Trudeau mania, the hopeless kind of Trudeau mania of 1968, disappeared fairly quickly.
How serious was he to not coming back in 1980?
Well, he wanted to come back. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He loved politics. He loved the Prime Minister's office. But he didn't want to come back and be locked in. He wanted to have freedom. He wanted to do things. He had a sense that his first 11 years had been missed opportunities, and he wasn't going to let that happen. If he came back, he was really going to do things. So he made the party come to him, because it would then be obligated to him. So he had a free hand, and of course he used it with the charter and some other things as well.
The October crisis, in this book, do we learn anything new about Trudeau and how he comported himself during that?
Well, it's pretty detailed. I had access to his papers, but also to the cabinet conclusions and the government papers that are out since that point. And what becomes clear is that he was, as he seemed, remarkably cool during the crisis. Many around him were highly emotional, and emotional in their decision-making. And his cabinet ministers, even those who were not great admirers of Trudeau, like John Turner, for example, Turner's recollection is he was so impressed with Trudeau's strength during that period. It was a time of great crisis. He just remains solid now. He may have been guided by people who were highly emotional, like Jean Marchand particularly, he himself remained that solid person that Canadians saw at the time and with whom they were very impressed.
And privately, was there much doubt in him?
Oh, I think he's the type of guy who was always troubled about what course to take. He would debate it internally. And he, in the War Measures Act declaration itself, he was convinced by that there was no other alternative, and he believed Marchand and McClelland and others who were reporting from Quebec that the stability of the state was threatened by outsiders, the terrorists on the one hand, but on the other hand, the people whom he thought should have known better, like Claude Ryan and René Lévesque and Marcel Rieu, an old friend of his who signed a petition saying that there must be negotiations with the kidnappers, and secondly, that there should be a coalition government formed. This after the PQ had been trounced in the election, so Trudeau saw that as illegitimate in democratic terms, and it made him very angry. So that moved him to do it as much as anything else.
And he cried, apparently, when Laporte died?
Yes. He cried often, but not publicly and not intentionally. I think some later politicians used it intentionally.
Yeah.
He cried at funerals, Diefenbaker's funeral, for example. Some say, and perhaps he said it to someone, that it was because his father died so young and he never got over the tears of that funeral. But he was an emotional man, and Laporte was not a friend of his, but they knew each other very well. They had worked together in the 50s against Duplessis, and they were in that small kind of intellectual journalist circle in Montreal. He would see him frequently, and he knew him, of course, as a member of the government, too. So it was a shock personally to him, and it was, of course, a doubly a shock because many people, the FLQ, for example, but others, too, said Laporte was a casualty of the War Measures Act being declared. It seems in retrospect that he wasn't. He tried to escape, and they just spontaneously murdered him. But nevertheless, Trudeau obviously was deeply affected by him.
Another reviewer of the book talked about your discussion of the women in his life. And you go through the relationships with Leona Boyd and Margot Kidder, Kim Cattrall, and Streisand, we've talked about her, and obviously Margaret Trudeau. How important were the women in his life to how he thought about life? Was there any effect, do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure. It's hard to imagine there wouldn't be. In terms of Margaret and the disintegration of the marriage, I think there's no doubt that it did have an impact on his political abilities and behavior in 75, 76, 77. Maybe before in a different sense, you know, becoming married for the first time at that age obviously does affect her behavior. But in that period as his marriage disintegrated, he lost his temper more often. He was more frustrated, less attentive to detail, didn't write as much on documents as he had before. But the most important influence was on the election of 1977. It didn't happen. Trudeau was way ahead in the polls and could have had a majority government, but he decided not to call it, and that was because his marriage was literally on the rocks and breaking up. He was getting public sympathy, but he didn't convert that into electoral gain. In terms of others, he spent a lot of time with women, and he talked to women very closely. He didn't stay a distance from them. He talked very, very closely to them, and with the result that as he debated a cruise missile, for example, the testing of it, Margot Kidder probably mattered more than Lloyd Axworthy.
Yeah. As a father, he was a good dad, right?
His children certainly say that, and there's every evidence in terms of his influence that he was. They adored him, and they speak of him in those terms. They just there's certain reverence, but they had fun with him. They were tough on him. They would argue with him. They'd debate, and they taunt him, and they refused to speak French, things like that. But in the end, they had a wonderful relationship.
Did you talk to Deborah Coyne or Sarah?
No. I know Deborah, and I've talked to her on other matters while writing this book, but I asked her about it, and she didn't want to talk about it, and I respected that.
Yeah. What's the relationship that she and the daughter Sarah have with the Trudeaus?
There's in terms of the formal relationship, the daughter Sarah inherited with the two boys, and so that's very, very significant. However, they're not you know, brother and sister, except in the technical sense. They don't see each other a lot.
In one of the footnotes in the book, you talked to Sasha, and had he lived and with her growing up, he claims that he would have had a much better time in his later years.
I think that's true. He, his Trudeau's health started fading really about 97, I'd say. Then there was a tragedy of the death of Michelle. And by that age, Sarah was 7 or 8. I think Trudeau, like fathers of his type, you know, intellectual and sports types, tend to like kids when they're older rather than when they're babies. But he spent a lot of time with Sarah in the earlier 90s, and it would have been intriguing, given his amazingly intense interest in women, to see how his relationship developed with his own daughter.
How much does Trudeau change in these years, 1960 to 2000? Then had they changed from his birth to 1968? Overall, was he pretty much the same? Those Jesuit values still in these years that he was prime minister and the sort?
No, I think he changed. I think, for one thing, when he came into politics in 1965, he was very much provincial rights-oriented and didn't want to open up the Constitution. As you know, he became a champion of a Constitution with the Charter and... He wanted that, but he didn't want to open up the Constitution in the mid-60s. He also became much more of a Canadian nationalist. He opposed nationalism because he didn't like Quebec nationalism, whether it was the Duplessis kind or whether it was the Quiet Revolution kind or the separatist kind. He saw it as old-fashioned and limiting and closing the doors and windows and suffocating people. But he had become, by the 1980s, judging by his speeches and his comments to people, really a Canadian nationalist, thought this was quite a country and that it was making its mark in the world and we should be very proud of it. So he became more Canadian.
His faith, I talked to Nancy Southam about this once when her book came out. It changed a great deal after Michelle died, did it?
Yeah, and Nancy would know more about this than I do, but because she was with him during that period and she herself has a great interest in religion.
Yeah.
I did a book with two others. Nancy's in it, on Trudeau and religion. He was a devout Catholic in that he prayed every day night, and he also went to mass whenever he could. After he retired, I think if anything, he became more devout. At least he had more time on his hands, so he went to retreats and meditation and this sort of thing. But when Michelle died, he was just shattered and doubted his faith, because how could a caring God take away wonderful young boy when leaving him behind a decrepit old body? And that was the question he asked. But he talked to others, including Nancy, among others, and as you could see at his funeral, his faith had returned, and that was a very traditional Roman Catholic funeral.
And by the end of his life, had the faith been restored?
Yes, it had.
Yeah. The relationship with John Turner, I mean, that's a fascinating thing to look at. I read with interest that there's this biography coming out by Paul Litt, is it?
That's right. Yeah, it should be out next year.
Yeah. Turner's resignation and Trudeau's reaction to that, I mean, do we know more now, perhaps, than we had previously?
Well, we do know more. We know that Turner had already been thinking of resigning after the 74 election, that his own personal circumstances, knowing that Trudeau was going to be around for 4 or 5 more years, growing family, he needed money, he was not happy with some of the directions of cabinet, and he felt more isolated than before. I think he could have been persuaded to stay if Trudeau had really wanted him to stay, but as you can see from the account, which comes from both sides, there's only two people in the room, but we've heard both stories, and it's obvious the two did not communicate well. I don't think Trudeau tried very hard to keep him, but it was a great loss to the government, because Turner was without a question the dominant minister apart from Trudeau.
Later in his life, did Trudeau come to like René Lévesque personally?
No. I think the opposite. He knew Lévesque since the 50s.
Yeah.
And they met very often in the early 60s during the initial days of the Quiet Revolution. The effect of the 76 election, the referendum, and then on top of it the constitutional quarrel, left both of them very hostile to each other. They saw each other in Montreal after Trudeau's retirement in 84 and would joke with each other, but I quote in there an interview that he had with Jean Moulin, which is fascinating. He couldn't bring himself to say anything good about Lévesque, except he was a very talented politician, which of course he was. Lévesque, for his side, recognized Trudeau as a great foe, but he was very hostile to Trudeau in his public and private remarks.
Had he participated more, Trudeau, in the 1995 referendum campaign, do you think he would have affected that outcome?
I don't know. We'll never know, I guess. I'm actually thinking of writing a book about that, that referendum, so it's one of the questions I'm pondering myself right now.
Did it pain him not to be asked to speak, say, at that rally?
Yes, yes. It pained him not to be there, just to have to watch it at the sign. Pained him that he was not involved. He himself thought it was a bad call on the part of the federal organizers to keep him out of it, but the federal organizers thought his stand in on Charlottetown and Meech, where it created so much antagonism, it would probably hurt the no side, and the decision was made to keep him out of it. I don't know. I think that I can't see where his participation would have picked up votes in the referendum, but you can't underestimate him. He's a powerful individual. On Charlottetown, just a few years before, he had turned around opinion in English Canada, we know, but in Quebec, too. When Trudeau opposed it, it did have an impact. But we know this from polling that was done. What is clear is that he remained, after he left politics, a very dominant political influence in Canada.
Were you tempted, I mean, you don't do this in the book, which has earned you great praise, were you tempted to psychologize Trudeau and sort of pass judgment on things that he did in the sort?
I did a bit in Volume 1. Unfortunately, there I had his own psychiatric records. He went to a psychiatrist in 1947.
Right.
And that was a gold mine. It opened up a lot of commentary and for me to make, and I talked about it, and you know, such things as his sexuality and fact, his faith, his relationship with his father and mother. Big questions. But in the political years, I didn't have that kind of material. I guess the only thing I might have talked about in greater detail, and I resisted it, it's quite true, was his relationship with women. And I had a hard time coming to terms with his marriage breakup and the bitterness of some of the fights I described them. I found it troubling that he was so, well, violent, I guess, towards Margaret, to be fair to say. And my thought about it is that this indicates how truly deep he felt this wound of the marriage breakup. In terms of other things about his religion and his zeal for privacy and his unhappiness after left office, I didn't think I really knew enough to go there. And I thought I'd just let the evidence speak for itself, and people could come to their own conclusions. I noticed a lot of them are.
Yeah. How do you approach a subject like Trudeau? This is now as biographer. When there's been so many books written about him, is it easier or is it harder?
Well, you have to be aware of what's been written about him, and so I've read everything that's been written about him, and some of it's been extremely helpful. But in my own case, I just try to enter his own mind and put myself in his situation. This is, I think, what a biographer must do. You have to enter the mind as much as you can of the other person. He's a very different person from what I am and what I know. But nevertheless, you do try to enter that mind and try to understand his motivations and where he was coming from. And the influences on him and what are those external influences. So those were the considerations I had in mind as I wrote the biography. With Trudeau and with Pearson too, I had what are very attractive people. They're very attractive human beings. I quote in, I think it's volume one rather than volume two, Robert Ford, who disagreed with everything Trudeau thought about the Soviet Union, and they had an interview with him where he just tore Trudeau apart and this, and then he said, but he's one of the most attractive human beings I've ever met. And that's the kind of feeling you get with Trudeau. He would charm you, and the same applies to Pearson. So I was lucky. I was doing a book signing last week with Mark Kingwell, and he did Glenn Gould, and Glenn Gould is a very, very unattractive character, and he talked about how hard it is to do a biography of somebody who's unattractive. Someone else had done something rather romantic to try to explain Gould's neurosis as endearing, but he said he didn't feel good about it because Gould was, you know, nasty to other people and terribly self-centered and egotistical. With Trudeau, you get a person who does care about other people, and he does. He's emotionally very, very rich, and so I found him attractive person. The more I lived with him over the last 7 or 8 years.
Does it surprise you how popular he remains? How I mean, this book it's been number one on a number of lists already.
Yeah.
Does it surprise you that Trudeau remains someone that people are interested in?
Yeah, I think it surprises me and the publisher. I have thought it wouldn't do quite as well as it has done in sales. It's been pleasantly surprising. But my sense is that Canadians look back to Trudeau's years as the years of the great questions: would Quebec stay? What are we going to do about energy? What are we going to do about the Reagan-Thatcher revolution, since we're a different kind of country? Those were big issues. There were major times, and you know, a referendum on whether Quebec should stay in Canada. That's a huge issue for a country. And Trudeau had around him big people, John Turner, René Lévesque. Those are significant figures in their own right. So you have a sense that the drama of the period strikes Canadians as important and significant understanding where we are today. So I think that explains. And the other thing is that, and the Liberal Party has demonstrated this in the choice of Mike Magnaniev, we keep looking for a leader like Trudeau, like the Americans look for a leader like Kennedy, somebody who does have charisma, somebody who does have a vision, someone who does speak to higher qualities. He's partisan, but he's not nasty about it. He's, he manages to stay above the fray in the way that some recent politicians have not.
What's next for you? You talked about this book on the referendum in
95. Well, I might be doing that. I don't know. I'm currently trying to consider what to do, and as the next project, I got a couple proposed to me, but I'm trying to think of one myself. So I've decided no more biographies of prime ministers. So for this, right. I've done too many for this in the recent past.
I mean, these books have become standards. John, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today, and as we did 3 years ago. Many congratulations on this book, and continued good luck with it.
Thanks very much, Joe.
You're very welcome. The book is called Just Watch Me, The Life of Pierre Trudeau, 1968 to 2000. It's published by Knopf. Its author, John English, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plano.